Hi, everyone. Thank you for tuning in and welcome to the Call Her Zionist podcast, a staunchly Zionist podcast by Zionist women. I'm your host, Ray, and I'm going to start out by saying, while this podcast will be predominantly female, I want to state that it is not and will not be a feminist podcast, but rather cover all aspects of Zionism from different Zionist women, some feminist and some not so. I plan to have more Joe Rogan-styled guest interviews from women of all different levels of Judaism, as well as non-Jews, who all of whom will hold their own view of what Zionism is to them. The goal here at Call Her Zionist is to bring a sense of comfort and community to those going through similar experiences being a Zionist in these dark times, and to educate those who don't know what the experiences of downright hatred and bigotry we go through both online and in person are really like. In this intro episode, I'll introduce who I am, talk a bit about the events of October 7th, and discuss briefly what Zionism actually is, where it comes from, and what it means to me personally. While I'm aware the majority of you probably know the events of 10/7 already, I feel it is necessary to go over some of the testimony and things we know that happened on that horrible day, in the case that not all of our listeners know what happened or just how barbaric it was. While I feel going over these events could be a whole episode or even multiple episodes, that is not the focus of this podcast. Throughout different episodes, I will suggest more podcasts that do cover October 7th and what has happened since in greater detail, my favorite one being Call Me Back with Dan Senor. A couple quick housekeeping notes before I get into it. There are words I will use throughout this episode that I'm sure a few of you won't have heard before. The first word is kibbutz. A kibbutz is a type of socialist compound, to sum it up more simply. Kibbutzim, the plural of the word, are sorts of towns and farming communities that are found all over Israel that now mostly are privatized, but at their beginning focused on socialism. The second word is diaspora, which refers to anyone living outside of Israel, any Jew living outside of Israel, and any land outside of Israel. So for example, I'm based in Canada, and thus I'm a Jew living in the diaspora. The final word I want to explain is aliyah. The Hebrew word itself means to ascend or rise, but more commonly now it's used in reference to Jews returning home and immigrating back to Israel. With all of that said, yalla, let's begin. As I'm about to speak on some of the events that occurred October 7th, I want to give any of you who've heard them already the chance to skip ahead. As I know for myself personally, none of it gets easier to hear or see, no matter how many times it is said or how much of the footage I have seen. For most, if not all of us, it is burned into our brains. So please, if you want to avoid hearing it again, I will give you warning when to skip ahead. This also goes for those of you who may not know how heinous the events that took place were. And while I feel it is important for everyone to have some idea of what happened, it is understandable for those of you who aren't able to process these events to also choose to skip ahead. My goal is not to traumatize any of you more than you already have been, but rather give those who truly do not know what occurred on October 7th, 2023, just a small sample of how truly terrible it was. We owe it to all the victims and those taken hostage to never stop talking about it. October 7th, 2023. A day no Jew or Israeli will ever forget. What began in the early morning as a normal day and also the holiday Simchat Torah for the Jewish people quickly became a nightmare none of us could have ever begun to imagine. At 6:30 in the morning, rockets began to fly out of Gaza, directed at Israeli civilian areas. To the Israelis living in the Gaza envelope, this was nothing unusual, as it happens at least a few times a year, if not more. Going about the regular procedure of heading into the bomb shelters and waiting out the attack, not a single person thought it's anything out of the normal. But that very quickly changed. That morning, while the rockets were flying as a distraction technique, 1,000-plus Hamas terrorists infiltrated into southern Israel and began the mass murder, rape, and torture spree that would cause the largest loss of Jewish life since the Holocaust. 1,200-plus Israelis murdered and 240 taken hostage. Countless women and even men raped and then butchered. An overwhelming number of bodies left mutilated so badly, we will never know who they were, including children. Even in a few cases, the family dogs were killed and mutilated. Now, I feel it's important to note, most of the populations of the different kibbutzim in the areas affected by the attack were what we call peaceniks. People who more than anything believed that peace was possible and even wanted a proper state for the Palestinians alongside an Israeli one, living in harmony together. They were the kind-hearted people who would pick up residents of Gaza from the border and drive them to receive medical treatments in Israel, who worked alongside Gazan civilians on the kibbutzim and would even invite them into their homes for a meal. These Gazan civilians were the same people who then, upon returning to Gaza, reported all of what they saw and learned about these communities back to Hamas, helping them to plan this attack for what was likely years before October 7th. Now, there is no one place I want to label as the worst affected, because every home, kibbutz, bus stop, town, or open field had its own truly horrific and barbaric actions carried out by the Hamas terrorists. I also want to note that it was not only Hamas terrorists that infiltrated into Israel on October 7th, but Gazan civilians who proceeded to loot homes and grab whatever they could, including Israeli men, women, and children that they dragged back to Gaza with them as hostages and proceeded to sell to Hamas or Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Some of those hostages, we still don't know where they are, and Hamas claims that they don't either, which means they're likely still in the hands of these Gazan civilians, or maybe dead somewhere, hopefully not, but it is very possible that the civilians also killed them and just left them. In my eyes, there are no innocents here, except for the Israeli civilians who were brutally attacked, butchered, and taken hostage. Now, please note that I don't mean the children in this situation. I feel for them as I do for any who might not support what Hamas did on October 7th. However, I hold the belief that those people are very few and far between in Gaza, if at all. The children of Gaza, due to being indoctrinated their whole lives, hold the belief that their sole purpose in life is to kill Jews and Israelis, something that is no fault of their own, but the fault of those whose care they are in. I also want to note that in Gaza, the population is about 2.1 million people, and per Israeli comments, there are about 150,000 Hamas operatives living in Gaza. So if the population of Gaza really didn't support Hamas, you could quite outnumber them and rise up, but they don't. So yeah. If you're someone who calls for a two-state solution, the most basic thing you need to understand is that until Hamas is wiped out and the indoctrination and hate stops, nothing will get better for the Israelis or for the Palestinians. Nor will your two-state solution work if the Palestinians stay hell-bent on wiping out Israel and killing its entire population, and the Israelis stay hell-bent on remaining alive. Something else worth mentioning is that even during the Einsatzgruppen murders in the Soviet Union in 1941, many of the Einsatzgruppen had to drink so much that they either forgot what they had done and what they were about to do, or maybe it was so that they could shoot Jews while intoxicated and mentally distance themselves. For those of you who don't know, the Einsatzgruppen were the SS parliamentary death squads, which followed the German army at rear into the Soviet Union. Their sole purpose was to murder civilians, which included communist Jews and others deemed enemies of the state. The Einsatzgruppen mainly used bullets, as this was before gas chambers were operational in the Nazi-occupied territories. Also, I'm probably pronouncing that word wrong. I don't speak German, so I apologize. My point, though, being that Hamas, by law of Islam, does not consume alcohol, and they actually take pleasure in murdering Jews while sober, so much so that they happily call their mothers to brag about it. I will definitely speak on that more at a later point in time in a different episode. The location from 10-7 I'm going to talk about and read testimony from is the Supernova Music Festival, where more than 360 bodies were found and countless were taken hostage. Nova was a large music festival near Kibbutz Re'im, where prior to the morning of October 7th, the party went on all night. The Nova Festival celebrated music and unity, where people only wanted to dance and spread love. Nova is like a family, says 26-year-old Tel Aviv bartender Sophia Nicotine. I bartend a lot of festivals, and Nova is something different. People got prepared for this party for weeks. Everyone knows each other. It was like magic. Quoted from a Rolling Stone article titled, "They Wanted to Dance in Peace, and They Got Slaughtered." Find the link in the show notes, as well as a link for a documentary about the Nova Festival and the events that took place for anyone who's interested. In full disclosure, I have not yet worked up the nerve to watch this documentary, so I can't tell you how much of the footage is included, if any. I'm sure there is. I cannot bring myself to watch it as of yet. If any of you do, though, please let me know how it is. I'm very curious about that. The testimony I am now going to read to you is cited from the New York Times, which I want to point out is not by any means a pro-Israel organization. And that is exactly why I'm citing their article, because it is not from what some would call a biased source. And by some, I mean the vile humans who deny this happened or claim that the Israeli government raped and murdered its own people. Link for the article will also be in the show notes. I highly recommend you all read it, but I will add that the article and the testimony I have pulled from it are extremely explicit. Something I also feel is important to note before getting into the testimony is that due to the Jewish laws on burial, we will never truly know the mass number of women, men, and children who were sexually assaulted and tortured before being murdered. But we do know that that number is staggeringly large, and there are many testimonies that can and will in the years to come attest to this, as can all of the footage taken by Hamas and posted online with pride by them. In the show notes, you'll find a link to Hamas.com, a website with extensive footage taken by Hamas themselves. It is not to be taken lightly, but having it in your back pocket can be useful for countering claims that these disgusting events never happened.
Now is the time to skip ahead for those of you who want to opt out of hearing the absolutely horrific accounts of what happened that day. Please skip ahead a minute and a half.
This testimony quoted from the New York Times article is from a 24-year-old female survivor of the Nova Festival named Sapir. The first victim she said she saw was a young woman with copper-color hair, blood running down her back, pants pushed down to her knees. One man pulled her by the hair and made her bend over. Another penetrated her, Sapir said. And every time she flinched, he plunged a knife into her back. She said she then watched another woman, quote, shredded into pieces. While one terrorist raped her, she said, another pulled out a box cutter and sliced off her breast. One continues to rape her, and the other throws her breast to someone else. And they play with it. Throw it, and it falls on the road, Sapir said. She said the men sliced her face, and then the woman fell out of view. Around the same time, she said she saw three other women who raped, and terrorists carrying the severed heads of three more women. In other testimonies, it is spoken of finding multiple women, mostly soldiers from the nearby army bases, who had been shot directly in the vagina, and one woman with nails driven into her thighs and groin. Those testimonies I cannot bring myself to read in full. The atrocities committed on October 7th have forever changed the lives of every Jew and Israeli. They are not something that should be taken lightly, and in full disclosure, I feel terrible not being able to cover more of it, because as I said above, we can never stop talking about it. However, as I also said above, I am not trying to traumatize you as my listeners or myself any more than we already are. I do, however, urge you to do more research into what happened if you don't already know. The next topic I want to speak about is a product of October 7th. It's what I can only describe as the new good. The new good falls under a few different ranges of emotion for myself personally, and I'm sure for many of you as well. The new good, for example, is when a friend, acquaintance, coworker, or even family member asks the question, how are you? For myself personally, my instant reflex, no matter who I'm speaking with, is to answer, I am good, which prior to October 7th was generally the truth. Post-October 7th, however, it couldn't be farther from the truth, as I know is the same for many, if not all of you. There have been many mornings at work for me post-October 7th that every person who walks by me will ask, how are you? And it's all I can do not to scream and cry, so I manage to choke out the words, I'm good. It's not their problem, nor will most of them care what the answer really is. On the inside, I'm in pieces. I'm broken, and I do not feel like a whole person. How could I? How could any of us? Even upon speaking with fellow Jews who you know are as badly affected or worse by the events of October 7th, I find that many of us will also choke out the words, I am good, to each other. Because at the end of the day, we're alive and safe. But that does not mean we are truly good. It only means that we know we are blessed to be okay. It means that because we know our community is hurting and that we do not want to burden anyone who might be worse off or more personally affected by October 7th than we may have been. The new good is in fact not good at all. It is grief, sorrow, pain, worry, and anger among so many other things. The new good is different for every person, but equally as heavy a weight to carry for our community. A community in which it will take years to recover our sense of security. With all that said, I want to move on to slightly more lighthearted topics and move this episode towards a more positive impact. I apologize if that in any way comes off as insensitive, as I do not mean for it to. So let's talk about what Zionism actually is, what it means, where it comes from, and what it means to me personally, a question I will ask all of the guests I have on this podcast. We'll begin with the definition of Zionism, as provided by Oxford Languages. Zionism, noun, a movement for originally the reestablishment and now the development and protection of the Jewish nation in what is now Israel. It was established as a political organization in 1897 under Theodor Herzl and was later led by Chaim Weizmann. While this is the more common definition you'll find online, what Zionism really is the belief that the Jewish people have the right to self-determination in their ancestral homeland, Eretz Israel. Everything else you hear is commentary from one side or another. While the official Zionist movement that Herzl dreamt of and became the father of only ignited its flame in the late 1800s, Zionism itself has been a core part of the Jewish people for 5,000 plus years. Every year on Passover, the Jews cry, L'shana haba'a b'Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem. And daily, when we pray to the east, towards Jerusalem. Every single Jew, whether it's deep on the inside or calling at them every day, has a yearning for Zion. So where does the word Zionist come from? Is it a new word no older than your grandparents, as some would claim that the state of Israel is? The answer to both of those questions is simply no. While the term Zionist was not often used until the early to mid-1900s, the word itself comes from the root word Zion, a word in which you'll find mentioned 157 times in the Torah. I will also add that in the Quran, the Jews are called Israelites. Within the first few references in the Torah, it more specifically talks about the city of David, aka Jerusalem, the eternal capital of Israel. Whether you like it or not, Judaism and Zionism are hand in hand. You cannot have one without the other, no matter how hard anti-Zionists and anti-Zionist Jews may suggest that it's possible, whilst they still celebrate holidays like Hanukkah, which, by the way, is a very Zionist, if not the most Zionist holiday. Something we saw during Hanukkah 2023 in the city of Calgary, Alberta, was a menorah lighting put on by, I say in quotations, Jewish anti-Zionist group, a group whom, since October 7th, have routinely stood at Palestinian protests while calling for a ceasefire but refusing to call for the release of the Israeli hostages, or denouncing the heinous acts committed by Hamas on October 7th, all while they simultaneously call Israel a terrorist state, among worse things. To stand and light the menorah that celebrates the Jews liberating Jerusalem from a foreign power in 136 BCE is another level of irony that is completely lost on anti-Zionists, both Jews and non-Jews alike. To be able to look at historical facts, texts, and archaeological proof and still say that Judaism, the land of Israel, and by proxy Zionism are not inextricably linked shows that these people have the IQ of a brick wall. And it's possible that might be an insult to the brick wall, which, by the way, you'd probably have a more productive conversation with. Much like the Gays for Gaza movement, anti-Zionist Jews are basically chickens for KFC, or cows for McDonald's, to put it in simple terms. And prior to October 7th, I feel like a lot of Zionist Jews maybe had a bit of space in their hearts to talk to them, to debate with them, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Post-October 7th, I know for myself personally, and for a lot of friends that I have, we don't have the time for them anymore. It's ridiculous. At this point, you're cheering for your own destruction. To many, the words Zionist or Zionism are regarded as dirty. The narrative on Zionism has been spun so poorly that the general public has a nasty reaction to it simply because they don't understand that Zionism does not mean there can't also be a homeland for the Palestinians. Most who aren't properly educated on the subject are of the belief that in order to be a Zionist, you must also be against the establishment of a Palestinian state, when this is not the case at all, and in fact, quite the opposite. Every peace deal that has been put on the table to establish a Palestinian state has been accepted by the Israelis, Zionists, and oftentimes not only by the Israeli government, but also by the Israeli public. It has been the Palestinian leadership who every time have refused the option of establishing an official Palestinian state, a topic I will also cover in a later episode. As I'm a proud Jewish woman and Israeli citizen, I'm of course a proud Zionist as well. I do not feel that you can be a Jew without being a Zionist. The two are synonymous with each other, always have been, and always will be. So what does being a Zionist mean to me personally, and who am I? As you already know, my name is Ray, but what you may not know is that I'm a convert. While being raised to be Jewish in a Jewish household, I was not born to a Jewish mother. Having been raised Jewish, as well as always feeling and identifying as Jewish, growing up it was the natural choice to convert and something I wanted really badly. So I made it official and went through the conversion process, which I will admit, being a convert makes me feel a little bit out of place sometimes, and admitting it to all of you is not something I actually really wanted to do, but something I felt that was necessary. It has, however, never affected my passion for Israel or for the Jewish people. If anything, it's amplified it. So, more about me. I was born in Alberta, Canada, and grew up on a small farm riding horses and playing in the dirt. In the area where my brother and I went to school, we were the only Jewish kids, and for most kids where we attended school, we were also the only Jews they had ever met. Thankfully, we didn't often face anti-Semitism, but I do recall punching a boy in the stomach at about age 11 for making a Holocaust joke. We were raised to be Zionists and proud Jews, no doubt about that, but we were also raised very secular. I didn't light Shabbat candles until I was 21 years old and in Israel for the first time. In fact, I didn't deeply feel or really care about anything Jewish or Zionist beyond just high holidays until I visited Israel that first time. At which point, and since, my connection to Judaism and Israel has never faltered. In early 2019, I moved to Kibbutz Yagur in northern Israel and spent 6 months studying Hebrew and working at a daycare. It was at that point I made the decision to apply for Aliyah. From late 2019 until late 2022, I spent my time dedicated to Israel advocacy, focused on my career in the film and television industry, and worked on my Aliyah application, which was approved in early November 2022. And on December 28th, 2022, I officially landed in Israel as a citizen. I spent the first 7 months of 2023 living in Tel Aviv in the best apartment in, my opinion, the whole world, which is a hot take, but definitely at least in Tel Aviv, with the most amazing roommates in the world who I could not be more thankful to have met, as they are now more like family. In late July 2023, I made the difficult choice to come back to Canada for work-related purposes, and I can't tell you now how much I regret that decision, especially post-October 7th. I have never felt farther away from my home, even though I'm physically in the place I was born, raised, and have spent the vast majority of my life. To me, being a Zionist means nothing more in definition than we as Jews have the right to self-determination in our homeland. But in practice, it means that my people have a place to escape, that we have a country of our own, so that the Holocaust and countless pogroms may never happen again. Post-October 7th, that looks a little different, not only for me, but for every single Jew, no matter where they are. October 7th showed us yet again how quickly and how willing people are to turn on the Jews. It has shown us that even when the worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust occurs in Israel, we as Jews will still always feel safer there than in the diaspora. A thought to most that would seem insane, but to us as Jews is a reality. It has also reminded us how unbreakable our light really is, how our love will always be stronger than any hate we incur. And that is Zionism, a love that far outshines any hate. Throughout thousands of years, many empires have risen and many empires have fallen while trying to kill the light of the Jewish people. And this time will be no exception to history. Not that I would even really deem the enemy we're currently at war with an empire. Only a terrorist state hell-bent on nothing but the destruction of Israel and the death of the Jewish people as a whole. Which, by the way, they have not been shy about stating. The final thing I want to say in closing this episode is Ein li eretz acheret. For those of you who don't speak Hebrew or haven't heard this term before, it means I have no other land. And yeah, I know, I probably pronounced that wrong. I'm working on it, okay? Any lomedet livrit. Thank you so much for tuning in to the first episode of the Call Her Zionist podcast. I sincerely hope you were able to take something away from it. Please join us again next week for our first guest interview with two amazing young women who will share with us their experiences being Jewish and Zionist on a university campus. If you have any episode requests or you yourself want to share your story, reach out to callherzionist@hotmail.com. And if you liked this episode, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts and find us on Instagram @CallHerZionist. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Shavua Tov, and Am Israel Chai.